the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Maroora's Magic Supercoach Podcast, following round 22. Two to go. Tommy, how are you going?
Yeah, good, mate. Pretty happy there's two to go. It's been a really long season and there's been a fair bit of carnage. It's been a pretty tough year all round, I think. So on the final hurdle, so we'll see where the ranks pop out and hopefully I can grab a bit of cash in a couple of cash leagues, but liver might hurt that.
Yeah, we'll talk about strategies for cash leagues in this as well, because a lot of coaches are playing for leagues, and I'm with you with this long season. Like, it's been an enjoyable season and a lot of activity with all these ins and outs and suspensions and injuries. But I was saying just to Xavier in the AFL Fantasy one, where it used to just be 22 rounds an AFL season. Then that went to 23 with these multi-buy rounds. Then this year, 24. So realistically, this week we should be season done, looking into finals, which certainly makes it feel a little bit dragged out. But we keep going. You mentioned liver, so how did your round finish? Because I think it might have been seven or eight increases in ranks in a row.
Yeah, it was. I certainly came down to earth this week. I think I looked at sort of my projectors on Friday night before bounce, and it was high 2500s, and I thought, yep, you beauty. After Friday night, I had a look at Supercoach data and seen where I might land based on his projectors, and it had me up around 70 odd, which I was really happy with. And as the weekend went on, it just got worse and worse. So had a bit of a shocker. So scored under 2300, 2296, and that was a round rank of 26k, which is a far cry from the average over the last 5 weeks of 1k. And I dropped 31 spots, and yeah, just a lot of things went wrong for me, and particularly around those players that I have pointed differences against the pointy end. I had a look before, and Liver's only in 30% of teams. I'm sure a lot brought him in because I think he was a bit more of a pod prior to the round. So I think a few got him for Dacos, and that would have bloody hurt. So I think he was a great option. But yeah, his 20 certainly hurt. Captain of Sicily, I was pretty happy with that at half time, and then obviously had the low second half because the ball wasn't down there as much, and Hawthorn got on top. KO dogged me again with their 30 second delay. I was trying to swap to Bontempelli when I seen him line up next to Day, and by the time I clicked the button, it was already lockout. So that didn't work out for me. And yeah, Darcy Cameron, who's obviously, I think he's in about less than 50% of teams, of the top 1K with his 67 hurt. And the silver linings was Jacko, who I did end up bringing in last week, put up 124. And I reckon he was a bit stiff on the scoring, to be honest. There's so many contested possessions, clean hands around the contest, and I thought he deserved more than that. But you certainly take it, and we move on. And hopefully I can get some good coverage from Matty Johnson in the last couple of this week, and maybe the last one, because it was a pretty bad knockout.
Yeah, hopefully not. Hopefully you get the reprieve. It's stiff, those early injuries in Supercoach. So no question that summed up your rounds. Still two rounds to go, though, so hopefully get back on that trajectory. So let's quickly talk about your trades. You bought in Jacko. I think leading into it, the options were a Doherty, which you can use to do some extra cover with the DPP swing. You toyed with a LDU, had that nice matchup, lowly owned, putting up big scores, and then the Jacko. What made you land on Jacko in the end?
It was a combination between a couple of things. I went to the Bombers game on Saturday, arvo, and I was tossing up the whole way down the missus drove, and I was going back through that, seeing who I should pick. And as the song started and the warm-ups were happening, I just thought, no, I don't want to be barricaded for LDU to get on top and dominate today. So I went with Jackson, and then when he started dominating, it was probably worse because I was barricading for him not to do as good, and he just kept on finding the footy. So, yeah, I think, like, obviously both, you know, put up really good scores for the round. I thought LDU probably slowed down and it could have been a lot bigger. But happy with Jackson. He's obviously got the really favourable matchup this week, and obviously the LDU potential tag in the last round was another factor as well. So, yeah, that were the two that I was really strongly considering. And I think Doc, it was the flexibility he gave, and obviously he was scoring well, and he had a massive third quarter until he got the core car. So that one worked out as well. So, yeah, not too many complaints, and I think Jackson was just that pod play and the one that could potentially go really large. And I Suspect he will this week, and hopefully he does the last round as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. We put up the 120, deserved more. He was everywhere when the game was won in that first quarter and still continued the rest of it, hit outs to advantage and all. So 120, can't complain, but I think you'll see a bigger one this week, hopefully. And I agree with you. I would have been scared with the LDU tags. The Gold Coast have now tagged three games in a row. Took back in, went straight and tagged Gordon. So I think it's no question he's going to get tagged in that final round of the year. There's Gold Coast, and who knows, versus Richmond. Obviously, the coach got him. Everyone got stuck in him for not tagging the Bont or letting the Bont be so dominant the week before. I wouldn't be surprised to see if even Richmond do something with LDU on the weekend. So my round, I actually bumped up 10 spots despite having the 21. Obviously, helped that you mentioned 35% of those had a Libba. The benefit of that 23rd man, and it's said at the end of the season we'll go through some learnings, and I really do think it's worthwhile. And I was able to loop Cameron, so despite he is less than 50% owned, I still got to avoid his score and put out others. And then I took the punt on a, knowing I had to give away a position. I wanted to go a bit unique with my captain because I thought I had to make up those 60, 70, 80 points elsewhere. So I went Tom Green, who delivered fine, and Tim English, who I'm an owner for, so I'm certainly not complaining. But geez, if you're a non-owner, you'd be pretty upset with how, I know he gets a lot of hit-outs to advantage. I think on the weekend, 60% of his hit-outs were to advantage Tim English, but he played pretty poor, well beaten for a 143. Yeah, I could see why non-owners are getting a bit upset with that. So, yeah, 1 week down and my 3 weeks of donuts, pretty happy to come away with only with an increase in rank. I'm sure that won't happen this week, hopefully, if everyone gets through unscathed. So you mentioned a few injuries. Doherty news hasn't come out yet, but as I've said, Cork calf, last times we've heard of that was Darcy Parrish last year, missed a couple of weeks. George Hewitt last year, missed a couple of weeks. And then it was Josh Dunkley this year who missed a couple of weeks, came back looking fine, but the last 2 weeks has obviously been pretty poor as well. Xavier's view is that how can you ever cork a calf? Like if it's tight in the calf, it's a calf. So wouldn't be surprised to see Doc miss this week, Libba's missing this week. Going through the philosophies, and it's worked well, being patient with trades. Having said that, I've got no trades, but looking at your philosophies of the past, I've always said you want to keep a trade up your sleeve for luxury trading right up until 2 weeks to go. If you've got cover and someone's out for 1 week, you potentially just play that cover as well and wait to 2 weeks to go. We've now got 2 weeks to go, so if you're an owner of Libba or Doherty and you've got one trade left up your sleeve, you're using that to move those guys out?
Yeah, every day of the week. I think the cover was really good on the weekend as well. It was Weddle and O'Donnell. I think he put up an 88. Obviously, Johnson. Like, there was some really good cover across the week that might make someone tempted, but I just don't see the utility in holding that trade. That cover might perform this round. It might be next round. It might be neither. So you just pull the trigger and you get in that best, the best primo possible, I think. And, you don't hold them from here. I think I said in the last couple of weeks with two rounds to go, if you've got a trade, you do the luxury and you try and, you know, hope that you come home strong. I certainly think there is utility to holding it for the last round for overall if there's another injury this week and your cover's pretty good. But I think in most scenarios, you'd be pulling the trigger.
Okay, so that's, you mentioned if you've got injuries, you definitely use your trade. But that luxury, say you've got one trade left and you've got a team of premiums, some underperforming, whether it's a Taranto, a Lockie Neal in the midfield's been a bit underwhelming, a few defenders been a bit underwhelming as well. Are you considering you'd use that one trade left to get them up to a top dog? Or as we've seen, like, what, there's weeks where Sheezel's under-delivering, he pumps out of 135. Will Day, similar, up and down, up and down. Jack Steele, similar. Mind you, he's been underperforming the last couple of weeks. It's almost the nature of this season that there's no clear, particularly in the midfield, clear top eight, that any player on their day can score fine. So rather than take your punt on someone else who might get 5 to 10 points more, but every chance 5 to 10 points left, would you consider with one trade left, if you're happy with your team, keeping it for one more week for the final round?
Yeah, I think I would. you're saving it for an injury. And I think in the second year that I came top 10,
I want Tom to Stewart. Doherty.
Yeah, no, Tom Stewart, and in came Dawson. Everyone else carried a donut through that round, and Dawson went 170, I think, or 150 plus, which you can't expect to happen, but that's a massive point increase. So if you're happy with your team, I certainly think there's a strong argument. I'm just having a look at the highly owned players, kind of above that 50% mark, and there's not a whole lot that you would be looking to jump off. I think Sheezel would be one, but at the same time, we've seen that he can score as well as anyone, and I don't think it's worth the risk of using the trade to sort of move off as a luxury, because it could backfire, and I think the chances that it would are high enough that I wouldn't want to use it. Like, there's a Neil, who's obviously in 94% of teams, who's been really poor lately. I'm not really sure you'd be worth trading out of that. Collingwood this week, they're not going to tag. He could find some form. There's a couple, and it's certainly, you got to weigh it up, but like a trade for Neil, who might score, you know, 90 this week, and you bring in a premium that scores 110, is that worth the trade, or is it a better option to hold the week? And if there is an injury come this round, you make up 100 points. I think it's obviously a bit of a cost benefit, and you're taking a punt. I think we said last week, like, the maximum amount of points that you can get is from holding the trade, and I think there's a very strong argument to doing that.
Yeah, I think you've convinced me as well to hold that. And it's even just looking, probably the last 10 weeks, there's been an injury to a common notable player in Supercoach, whether been forced trades for trades or forced to use cover. So the likelihood is that there is going to be another one for this week. You mentioned Sheezel. He might struggle a bit this week with Zeeble's last game, and imagine everything's going to go through him, but everything went through him on the weekend, and Sheezel still managed to punch out a great score. And then he's got the final round of the year, Gold Coast, without Zeeble in it, and we know what he can do without Zeeble in it. Obviously, if you're injury and you've got an injury, Doherty, if you're trading him out, Houston bounced back. I never watched that game versus Geelong. I don't know what happened there, but he went back to what he'd been doing for the most part of the year with another 120. The other popular replacements for a Dacos in defence, as you mentioned, Doherty was looking great until he potentially got injured. Luke Ryan, easy matchup, and sometimes those easy matchups aren't great because the ball just never went back down there. I know he played a little bit more accountable without Hughes in the team, but I still think he's got the game to be able to score fine. I think he's going to repay the faith to those owners, well, up to 40% of the top 100, so not a lot must have gone Dacos to Luke Ryan. I think he's going to be fine. The one who really stands out, 133 in his last three, 119 in his last five, is Nick Newman. If you were a Doherty and had a trade and forced a trade, and you're tossing up between these more unique defenders who likely people will be tossing up between, whether it's a Houston, Ryan, or Nick Newman, how would you rank those three?
I think I would go Houston, Newman, and then Ryan. And I think that's based on scoring potential. I think looking at Houston, the knock on him is the inconsistency, really high ceiling, but he can put up a low score occasionally, obviously 128 on the weekend, but it was 61 before that. But then he had three rounds of really high ceiling games, including 176, and there was an 85. And then before that, there was two games of 146 plus and a 47, and then four games of over the ton. So it is pretty common for him to go up and down. I think if we look at that pattern, he's put up the poor score. He's got two rounds to go. It's the minimum has been two really big ones in a row. So I think just based on that, he's going to get two big scores. I think just based on that high scoring potential, I would go him. Newman, he was good on the weekend. He obviously had a lower second half, but he was scoring really well in the first half. And the form prior to that says it all. I think he's a really good option. He's obviously, in terms of that affordability, a lot better than Houston. I think with Ryan, it's just the ceiling. Like, you know, his score wasn't too bad on the weekend. Would he get an 83? It was an 88 before that, and he's coming up against Port this round, who are pretty restrictive when it comes to defenders. So I think he'd be the last one I'd be looking at, but they're all decent options. I just think I'd probably rank them in that order.
Yeah, I think I'd rate them the same as well. Houston, that round 24 matchup versus Richmond, you just imagine what he's going to do in that game. Newman, great form, and just he's got GWS last round of the year, and he kept... I still can't believe the stats went back. Looked the other day. He kept Toby Green to 5 possessions in round 4 when they played them. So you imagine he's going to get that matchup again and might be a little bit more defensive than he has been in the last couple of weeks, where he's taken a bit more of an attacking role with Doherty out of there. And, yeah, Ryan, I'm still confident for those who have Ryan, but I think if I had to make a trade, it would be those ones. In terms of the midfield mix, if those have the opportunity to trade a Libber, I think there's one obvious candidate, and it took one half to warm up, and then he finished with a round high clearances of 10 clearances and, 14 tackles or something. So he's didn't take long to warm up, old Clary Oliver, with his 128. He's got Hawthorn this week, and we all know what Finn can do. Is that enough for you to jump into probably the best player in Supercoach, knowing that one of the top 100 own him, none of the top 10, 1% of the top 1,000 own a Clayton Oliver? Or are you just scared of this Finn, particularly with the Libba owner, where he was doing the job on him before he got injured?
Yeah, I think I'd avoid just based on the Finn tag. Like, he's as good as any tagger that we've had over the journey in terms of shutting down. Obviously, Libba was more of that the cold face type of player, so Hawthorn are valued stopping that over what Bont can do, I guess, inside and outside. And I guess in terms of the size, Oliver's a really difficult matchup. But I think quelling his influence is probably going to be a little bit more of a priority than Petrarca. I actually don't know Petrarca's CBA numbers on the weekend, but obviously if he cops the tag, he's going to go forward. And then they might push Finn on to Oliver. I think they might have a backup plan for that. So I just think there's enough there to worry me out of it. And although he is a pod, if he scores, you know, 100 or 90 on the weekend with a tag, you'll get better. You should be able to get better output over 2 rounds from somebody else.
Yeah, for Tracker, 62%. And you wonder whether that was it, the fact that Sam Mitchell, who's as clued on as anyone, so I'll respect whoever he picks to go and tag. Whether it was that he understands the value of Libba, who I know super coaches not understand the value of him, how good he's been in the clearances, in the clenches, and how good he has been, or if it's a matter of him thinking, well, if Finn goes to Bont, Bont can easily drag him forward, clunk some marks, kick some goals, and we're in some trouble, whereas Libba's going to be limited to that midfield role. So if that's the sense, as you mentioned, Petrarca can easily sneak forward, which means that Oliver's the more like for likes, and it's enough for me not to dive into it. Obviously, it could be something like a Jack Viney, who did really well on the weekend as well, but I just don't want to muck around with a team with Finn, given how good he's going. And I've said before, I've never really been a big matchups person with selections, because over the course of 10 weeks, the cream will rise to the top, and you can have a few dud games and tag games, but you're still going to be in the top echelon. With 2 rounds to go, all you need is one poor score of a 80 or a 90, and it bumps you from a top 8 mid to below the top 20 mid. So it's purely about matchups. So you'll see with the Trade Insights, we'll put out the last 2 weeks, identify who we think, when they're coming up, a team who might get the tag. I know Rory Laird's got Sydney and West Coast. They haven't tagged really all year, so I think they're going to get a pretty clean run at it. Zachy Merritt has GWS and Collingwood. I know Cal Ward's been doing some tag job, and it's shown in the past that tagging Merritt is a good way of cutting off the head at Essendon, so he potentially could get a tag. LDU mentioned that already. I think that's locked in that round 24. With 2 weeks ago, it's enough for me to avoid that. Petrarca as well. So we're starting to get pretty limited in our options when you look at those 2. I think Tom Green, although he's been pretty disappointing to owners who started with him, really presents some value with Essendon and Carlton to finish the last 2 weeks. And he's just been a comeback from his injury. going really well. I almost have him on top of the midfield targets because of that nice run to come home. Sarong could get the Finn tag in the final round, as to a Brayshaw. Neil, as you said, he's out of form. So for me, if I was to trade out a Libba and had to find a midfielder, I think I'd be going either a Parrish, or the beauty about being the second best midfielder in a team is it means you always avoid that tag. And Dane Swan had it for all those years when Pendles was the star and Dane Swan was the fancy super coach pig, because he just always went about his business about being tagged. So it's big for me, it's a Parrish or a Tom Green. Where would you set your sights in the midfield if you were making a trade?
Yeah, they're the two for me. Like you said, I think Brayshaw, he's only in 66% of teams, so he could be an option. I think lots will be tempted by LDU, but that tag risk is just too much, two rounds. You can't jump into someone that might get shut out of it a game and, you know, score a 60. So I think it is Tom Green or it is Parrish, and I think I would rank Parrish over Green. I just think there's a bit of safety in the consistency. Tom Green probably has a bit of a lower floor where Parrish's floor is a lot higher. So, I think I'd go to Parrish. He loves playing against Collingwood, and I think if GWS do put work into someone, it's going to be merit, so that should open up Parrish.
The Rucks, obviously not much to speak about. Those English Marshall owners would be pretty happy for the weekend and pretty happy with the upcoming matchups with English, with a Bailey Williams West Coast matchup, who we know give up the most points in Supercoach. And then Rowan Marshall has a Geelong, who Reece Stanley sounds like he's going to miss this week, as well as Blitzarve. So he's going to be rucking up against a Shannon, I keep calling him Shannon Noel, but I think it's Shannon Neal. And while the temptation's been there for a few weeks to do that switch to a Max Gawn, who has that juicy Sydney matchup in round 24, I doubt anyone's going to be doing any trades in the ruck. It's at forward line. We mentioned it last week. Similar position with those mids, all with tag threats. That do you use that if you do have a Libba or a Doherty and you've got DPP, do you get in a forward instead? And once again, Luke Jackson with the Hawthorn to come. So Port Adelaide, then Hawthorn to come, I think. He's as good as any in the forward line. Anyone else you want to touch on? There's been some really underwhelming poor performers, none more so than Josh Dunkley the last couple of weeks. Hopefully he comes back and returns to faith. Cogs had a down game on the weekend with low CBAs. It was a surprising move by the coach, who I think's been pretty good all year with his positions, but kicked him out of the midfield, put in Toby Green, and Toby Green is effective in the midfield, but Cogs has been their main man all year and been playing great footy there, and they've been winning, so that was a bit of a surprise to see him drop down to 38%. Hopefully that bounces back. Jack McRae, we talk sliding doors. I was going to try to go against the grain and get him in instead of Rosie about 5-6 weeks ago. One's average, or Jack McRae's average sub-90, and Rosie's gone 112 the last five, so I've got away with one there. I don't know what's going on with Jack McRae and what's happening there with Bevo. Obviously, we've mentioned Darcy Cameron, who's been underwhelming, and I feel bad. I did tip someone a couple of weeks ago into Cameron over a Luke Jackson. Forward line, Jackson's still probably the number one target?
Yeah, I think so. The matchup against Port is more favourable than the one against Williams on the weekend. And I think in terms of the form he's in, the role he's got, the way he plays, the scoring is going to be there. So I think in terms of those players that are lowly owned, I'd certainly be grabbing him. And I guess that decision, obviously, if someone's bringing someone into the mids, we've got Green, we've got Parrish, and then there's Jackson as well, that everyone should be able to bring in through a bit of DPP. I think I'd rank Jackson above them too, just based on potential scoring output. Do you see that same?
Yeah, I do as well. Obviously, Reeves is good, and he beat Tim English in the hitouts. It's funny, Tim English, both times he's played against Reeves, he's kept him to low possessions as well. I think Tim English might have even had sub 10 again on the weekend, and that includes that one kick out he took himself at the end of the game. So Reeves is pretty tricky, but just watching the way Luke Jackson plays, I think he'll be fine over the next two, particularly with this week against Port to come. So come captains, and I was not beating myself, but we talk about your theory of it's good to avoid that popular early vice captain, because if they're poor, then everyone's going to rely on the next option as their captain, and if they get a substandard score, that's a great way to jump the pack. Hindsight, what Merritt did against North Melbourne earlier in the year, where I think he had 12 touches and two goals, it might have been 16 touches and two goals, it was most ever in his career in the first quarter, and he obviously got the tag, had one possession the first quarter, the least in his career. Hindsight, we probably should have seen that happening and avoided that. There's a few which looks to be obvious candidates coming up, captain, vice captain, on the weekend. I mentioned the two rucks, obviously St Kilda versus Rowan Marshall, owners there, versus a ruckless Geelong, and then the Bulldogs boys against West Coast. Are you likely, even though that you're trying to catch the top 100 and drop some ranks last week, are you going to try to do something slightly different, or you'll play a straight bat and finish with one of those big dogs on the Sunday?
I think I'm going to be forced into playing a straight back. I'm really limited in my loop. So if I need Marek to miss from West Coast, is a test with a calf. I don't see him coming in. If he's not named, he'll be my only loop option that's after Madden. And anyone before that just doesn't work for me. I'd have to go in the Neil direction. So for me, I'm pretty hamstrung. In terms of the options, it's also a pretty hard week. And I think out of the teams and the matchups, Marshall's obviously got a really good matchup. He makes a whole lot of sense. And then into either of the Doggies boys, I don't think he can go past either of them. But I think English is the better pick, just given that really high ceiling of scoring that he's been putting up lately, and Bond hasn't quite gone that big. So that's a pretty straightforward captain's week. I think it's a really hard captain's week, but I think most will go in that direction. It might be limited by loops, and really, yeah, looking earlier, the options that I have before Marshall, it really is a lucky meal, and I don't want to jump on that. So I'm hoping Marek doesn't play, but I think if I have to choose, it's probably going to be the English if I don't have that loop later in the round.
Yeah, if English can get a 140 with 10 touches, he could get 25 versus West Coast, so what can he score there? He's a nice fullback, but you made a great point. I just looked at then myself and all the popular red dot rooks on the bench or injured players are playing early, like the final game, Dockers versus Port, D's versus Hawks, Dogs versus Eagles, all on the Sunday, and then even the Saturday night games, if O'Sheen gets named, you're right. Make sure if you are doing your captain, vice captain, that you are certainly plan ahead to make sure you can execute that. And now you've mentioned, I'm going to probably have to go early as well unless Marek misses. And you're right, I don't want to do a Neil. It could be, I'll probably be a Tom Green or a Darcy Parrish into a big Timmy English, I think. But as always, when it comes to Trade Insights time, I'll put my final thoughts of what we're doing with that captain and potentially some options for those who do want to take a punt and go a little bit left field, some options for them as well. Because I dare say a lot of coaches will be going into a Bont and English, and it's easy to look at English's last scoring. It's just a natural score in this game that most will be falling back on him. So there might be a few, if you want to go against the grain, a few alternate little moves there. Any last messages, Tommy, those around the pointy end, bit of advice for those, how to deal with it, and also those in their league matchups, what if they should do something different this week?
Yeah, I guess first thing, I was just having a look at my team in terms of that luxury trade. I know we said like the probably best point of difference is to wait. I think if I was a DCAM owner, I would move him on. Out of all the players that I've got in my side, the options that probably will score poorly, like DCAM's coming up against Big O this week, and then he's probably got the Draper matchup in the last round. Both are pretty restrictive when it comes to rucks, and he's just, you know, out of form. I think there's a chance he goes big, but I think if I was going to go anyone for a luxury, it's 40K to get to Jackson. That would be the direction I go, and if I owned him, I wouldn't be saving that trade. In terms of, I guess, how to play it coming home, like you just, like everyone's, most people are in a position where you've just got to be playing the cards that you're dealt and just, you know, I suppose take it one game at a time, really. There's not really many impacts we can have on our team. I think having a look at loop options is really important, especially if you're pushing for top 10, top 100, or whatever goal you've got in mind. It was probably a bit of an oversight of mine with Johnson on the bench, who had scored well. I could have looped with Libba. I suspected Libba would have got the fin tag, but I wasn't sure if he'd go to Bont. I probably should have just done that. Obviously, the 20 is very much a hindsight call, but a 90, I probably should have taken that. So really considering those loops, looking at the matchups of the players that you could probably get off field, because it can certainly save you some points. And if it costs you, worst case scenario, if you've got a 90 sitting on your bench, you know, worst case scenario could be 20 points. And I think it's worth having a punt the other way. And with captains, I think, like, I went against the Doggy Boys on the weekend, went Sicily. I think it can hurt you too much. I wouldn't be getting too cute with it this week. There's very much, very clear matchups. Most people are going to be on English, and I certainly wouldn't be betting against him this week. So I think it's probably the type of round where you've got to play a bit of a straight bat and just hope that the other players in your side, those pods, can put up big performances, and you just put your luck to the Supercoach gods.
Agree, mate. Spot on, especially with 2 weeks to go. You'd be surprised how unique your side is. It's not like English is owned by 100 of the top 1,000 anyway. Just looking at it here, he is owned by 82% of the top 1,000. So he's unique in itself amongst a lot of them. So back your side in, and yeah, those loops, although it does take a lot of extra thinking and extra time, which I don't like doing on the weekend. I like just setting and forgetting. It can, particularly with 2 weeks ago, if you're in the pointy end, be worthwhile mucking around with those. But as always, we'll fill in our final thoughts towards the end of the week. But cheers, Tommy. Looking forward to chatting to you next week when we're coming into the final round of the season.
Cheers, mate. Good luck, everyone. Bye.